down some quick takeouts on stories we're following all this week. We're going to go to Washington first. Todd Zwillick, our Washington correspondent, is out this week. So Julie Mason, our friend and White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner, is here to answer the tough questions about the Senate Finance Committee passed yesterday. So, Julie, President Obama and his administration is probably very thrilled about the fact that this got out of committee, but not everybody is happy. Who is the most upset about what came out of the Senate Finance Committee?
There are a lot of upset parties, I will say that. Well, one group that's really upset, it's the unions. They don't like what they saw in the Senate. Senate version of the health care bill doesn't include a public option, and that's something that the unions were really pushing for. So they were a little circumspect in their joy yesterday when President Obama was in the Rose Garden extolling the greatness of the Senate Finance Committee action.
Are the unions going to be happy with anything less than a robust public option?
No, they're really not. You know, they've been very organized and a very strong voice on this.
Well, they're unions.
Yeah,
they're organized,
it's true.
Labor.
Exactly. But they, you know, their role has been somewhat submerged. It hasn't been really out front. The problem is that Obama has no compunction at all about thumbing his nose at these traditional Democratic constituencies. And we've seen that in other issues, gay rights and the environment. He just, you know, the White House feels like this is a time to be pragmatic, and they don't really have a lot of time to mollify liberal constituencies. So the unions may not get what they want from the White House.
Who does he have to mollify then to get this out of both the Senate?
He needs to mollify the middle. Those Blue Dog Democrats are still very, very tetchy about this whole thing. They are concerned about how to pay for it, which is still an issue that's unresolved, and also what it's going to look like. So keeping his own party together is going to be tough for the president as this process sort of rolls on.
So we heard Senator Orrin Hatch talking about how the Democrats aren't going to be happy unless they get a single-payer option. It seemed to me like first of all, single payer is in none of the bills that made it out of committees. Are the Republicans still focusing on the single payer issue?
Republicans are all over the place. Single payer has become sort of like a dirty phrase to throw out there to get everyone all fired up. No, like you say, no one's talking about single payer. That's not even on the table.
Okay, I guess we're going to keep watching this as it moves through. All five bills move through the Senate and the House. Thanks so much, Julie Mason,
sure.
White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. And now to business with Louise Story, finance reporter for our partners, the New York Times. So yesterday we heard some very surprising news from the Supreme Court. I assume that you were surprised. They've agreed to hear an appeal from Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling about his fraud case. Do we have any idea why they just decided to do that?
Well, Celeste, he's arguing that he did not get a fair trial. And if you look at some of the coverage back when we were all talking about Enron, remember, that's the company that shifted money all around and hid it from shareholders. It was an energy company. If you look at the coverage from back then, you had things like the Houston Chronicle saying, "Your tar and feathers ready? Mine are." You even had a rap song, "Drop the S off Skilling." So there definitely was a lot of negative coverage. He's been saying that he had an unfair trial in the Houston area because of it. And in fact, on appeal, he's already gotten some judges to agree that he did have an unfair trial, and they're reducing his 24-year sentence. They haven't decided what they're reducing it to. So he's arguing that, and he's also arguing about the meaning of the law he was convicted under. It's kind of technical with that, but the Supreme Court will be weighing this particular law that says it's a crime to deprive another of the intangible right of honest service. So they'll be evaluating that.
Okay, well, there's news on another big story, the current big legal case, aka scandal in the financial industry, and that has to do with the Bank of America. They have a whole bunch of lawsuits from shareholders, and there's some regulatory investigations, but you found some juiciness in this story. What have you turned up here?
So Bank of America is turning over all kinds of documents now to Congress and to the Attorney General of New York that they had tried to keep secret. And I got my hands on some of the first ones coming out. And these are pretty juicy. This is an email exchange in January, right before Bank of America got another bailout, in which we've got two board members emailing each other during a board meeting about what they think of this second bailout and what they think about Bank of America's situation. And let me just tell you how some of this email chatter goes between these two directors, Tom May and Chad Gifford. Remember, Chad Gifford used to be CEO of Fleet. He's
right.
Pretty famous. And so Tom says, wow, to Chad, and Chad says, concentrate on the phone. And Tom says, screw you. Chad says, unfortunately, it's screw the shareholders.
Oh.
Tom reminds him, no trail. And Chad comes back, only stated in the context of a horrible economy will affect everyone. Tom comes back, good comeback, holy beep on the people. Amazing, says Chad. So this is the kind of dirty laundry that we're going to be seeing as more of these secret documents come out. And so it promises an interesting story over the next few weeks.
When will people learn that if they're going to screw the shareholders, they can't put it in email?
Don't go in Gmail. Don't go in your email.
Louise Story, finance reporter for our partners, The New York Times. And as always, our final takeout comes from you, the listeners. We asked you for your stories about our conversation on how age affects job prospects. We spoke a lot about how hard it is for younger folks to get hired in this economy. And we heard at 8778MYTAKE about older people as well. Here's Paul from Pontiac, Michigan.
Hello, my name's Paul, and I'm calling about the job search age thing. And I'm 54, and I've been searching for a job for 14 months, and I believe my age is a deterrent.
We heard much the same thing from Bill.
Good morning. My name is Bill. I'm a 61-year-old registered nurse. Told I have an excellent resume, but it never gets past the first phone call. Got wiped out by medical bills, so I need to keep working. I'm just not getting the offers.
And a younger listener, Devin, called to tell us how his situation affects older people.
Hi, this is Desmond from Detroit. I work in the social work field, and actually I replace someone significantly older than me, but apparently in my field, people tend to get burnt out quickly, so I apparently am doing circles around her for less money.
Don emails us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. This is his reason why. He says, my wife and I are both laid off. We have roughly 50 years between us of continuous retail experience. Can't find any work to cover our bills. I get the distinct feeling that many employers don't believe I will stay with them once they hire me when something better comes along. I always felt my experience was an asset. So far, it seems to be a liability. And Carol emails us, I have 6 kids ages 17 to 32, and they have families they're trying to support, taking entry-level jobs closer to home or not able to get work at all. They can't get adequate employment because of their age and experience. It's a horrible catch-22. My kids doubled up in houses because they can't afford to live on their own. So we have families meshing together, sharing expenses, and still struggling to get by. Lots of personal stories about that statistic about younger people having a hard time finding work. When you hear a statistic that rings a bell in your personal life, you know who to call. Us, 8778-MYTAKE, or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org.